Imagine sleeping in the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's iconic sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee plus 15% off your first order with code Odyssey. So head to B-O-L-L and Branch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country, the kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Everybody, Matt Aguilar here from comicbook.com, and welcome to Comic Book Nation's The Pull List, where we talk about all things comics all the time. I have an amazing squad with me today. Kofi Outlaw's here.
What up?
And of course, the amazing Jamie Lovett. How are you, buddy?
I'm good. That's going to be the name of my comic book when I get one, The Amazing Jamie Lovett.
Well, when that happens, we'll have to talk about it right here. We'll have you back, you know what I mean, and get you to sign some stuff for your fame. So I'm excited here. I'm always excited when Jamie joins the show and we have X-Men to talk about, because I just know it brings me back to the days in the office when we worked there on Saturdays, just us play Marvel Champions.
Third wheel here.
Because then, I guess we had Friday nights.
I'm the Wolverine to your Cyclops and Jean Grey, huh?
We had Friday nights, and then me and Jamie had Saturdays. See, it was perfect.
Wow, you are a two-timer. I can't even use the language I want to use.
Also, I'm noticing a trend that comic book just wouldn't put me with a bunch of other people. Just have me only working with one person at a time. I think that's something about me. Yeah. So let's get to it. Obviously, we've been talking the last couple weeks. Have been buzzing with X-Men 97 talk, and it turns out there's also a comic. X-Men 97. This one is set in between the original series and the new Disney Plus X-Men 97 series. So trying to fill in all those blanks. For me, though, and obviously we're going to get into light spoilers, not super spoilers, but honestly, I don't think there's really any major spoilers in this. I think it does a lot of stuff of things that the premiere of the show set up pretty well. But I think as time moves on, I'm hoping that the series will kind of carve out a lane for itself of actually revealing some substantive stuff. Otherwise, I'm not sure exactly how crucial it is. Jamie, what do you think about, is this something that people who are fans of the series can skip? Is this something do you feel like will prove its worth over time? What did you think?
I mean, if you're coming at it from a perspective of does this have essential story beats, that then you probably don't need to read it, because the big reveal in this issue is something revealed in the trailer for X-Men 97, right? Yeah. So that's not what this is about. But if you watch X-Men 97 on Wednesday and was like, I would like more of this now and not have to wait till next week, then yeah, this is going to get you that same vibe. I was actually really impressed by you know, how well it channels the same energy as the TV show into the comic. So yeah, it's not going to like give you any information that is vital to enjoying the show, but it will give you that same like joy, I think.
Kofi, how did you feel?
You know, I was a person who, when we did our kind of segment on this, reviewing X-Men 97 on the hopefully award-winning Comic Book Nation live show, it was that, you know, I had to eat some crow because I was kind of initially really against X-Men 97. And like, I rewatched the old series and I was like, I don't know, guys, like, I think nostalgia mania has gotten, we're getting to the peak of it. And then I watched the first two episodes and, you know, even as we're out now, there's one that's airing, you know, as we speak, that I'm in the middle of. And it's like, yeah, the series is achieving something that I think is unique among nostalgia revival series in the sense that it's kind of capturing the spirit and even the aesthetics of the old one, from some of the hokey animation to some of the hokey dialogue that you can tell is very intentionally structured that way, but still doing it in a modern way where there are modern moments of animation. There's already iconic moments of this series on the screen, like Cyclops and the jumping from the plane sequence and all that. And even modern kind of subjects they're tackling, like in one episode, the second episode, we're tackling kind of the differences of geopolitical conflict and, you know, insurrection stuff. Like, there's a whole lot going on in the show. And so I had to eat crow and be like, okay, so X-Men 97 is doing it. It's doing the old and the new all at once, and kudos to that. I think this comic is just an extension of that. It's what Jamie said. It's not necessary. It's smart enough to balance itself to not be necessary, but to be interesting, because it is, in this first issue, just giving you plot beats that explain stuff in the show. Why does Storm look the way she looks when the show begins? You know, how did we get into this initial thing with Jean Grey and Cyclops and their big life change and all of that? I think there's even setup of like some of the stuff we see in episode two, and the characters we see are kind of set up here. So, and it still feels like the X-Men cartoon from the 90s, the dialogue, what they say, how many times Rogue reminds us that her powers are going to hurt somebody, you know, and everything she walks into. She's like, man, I went in this Burger King for a Whopper, but if somebody touches me, they're going to get a Whopper instead. And you're like, okay, you know, how many times are we going to do that joke? A lot. That's the story of the X-Men 90s cartoon. So I think it's smart. It's actually a comic series that extends the experience of the show. And like Jamie said, if you watch the first two episodes and you were like, why on some things, you know, we wrote a bunch of articles, but there's also this comic series that's just doing pretty good job of filling you in as well. So I'm unexpectedly enjoying having X-Men's kind of 90s era brought back here.
I love that it keeps the tradition of Storm's hair being a focal point of X-Men stories. Like, she can't just get a haircut or a comb it a different way. It has to be explained in detail its importance.
It's a plot point. Yes.
Oh, yeah.
I will say, I think if we win an award, it will be because of Kofi's spot-on Rogue impersonation. I think that was pure joy, and that deserves some sort of plaque.
Well, it's because I tied in a Burger King ad into that. That's why. That's why. That's why I will hopefully one day make the big bucks, you know?
You know, it's funny, because the thing I loved most about this, because I agree with you guys, I think it does capture the show well. I don't think it's necessary in any real way, but I do leave the caveat there of, as time goes on and they're able to flesh out more of the world, this could end up being necessary to really, like, I think they did a really good job of expanding the world in the first issue of characters. The fact that we get to see a bunch of characters that we don't get to see in the show. I mean, Dazzler alone, and yes, I know I'm a huge Dazzler fan, but like, still, it was awesome to see that part of the world fleshed out. We don't get a chance to ever really jump into that. It was great to see Jubilee and Gambit and Rogue, you know, have some time, because they don't really get a ton of time together in the, you know, in the first series, because even in that club scene, right, they're like worlds apart and stuff. And so I enjoyed that. Even the villains, right? We get to see like a whole group of villains here that show up that we don't really get a big look at in the show. So I think in that way, it will end up being really cool, because we can get a bunch of characters in the comic that we won't really get to highlight in the series. So I think by the end of it, is this an ongoing? Is this a mini? I don't actually know.
I'm not 100% sure. I want to say it's a mini, but I feel like it's one of those things where it could get more minis going later. But I feel like it's, we're just going to fill in the gap with this one and go from there.
Yeah. So fun start. Let's move into actually in the whole spirit of not nostalgia, but like bringing a twist to something that we once knew. Batman Dark Age is a new, it's not a sequel to Superman Space Age, but it is in the same vein of taking a well-known origin story and reworking it and kind of giving it its own feel and twist. In this one, you know, we really get to it. Look, I will say it's hard for me to jump back into origin stories, especially with Batman, because we had the excellent Batman the Knight, and I just feel like I will hold now everything to that. I will always compare. It's not a fair comparison because I feel like they're doing something completely different. But again, it's just that thing is always in the back of my head. But I really enjoyed a lot of the ideas here, especially as we get towards the end of the book. There's a big twist that I won't spoil here. But I do feel like the lead up to that twist and that happening really does kind of leave its mark on Bruce Wayne's origin and path into Batman in a way I wasn't expecting. And there's also just like, I like the way they approach Alfred, some of the ideas that they use to mix it up. This is a hard origin to do something new. It's just because we've seen it so many times, but I still think there was some really fun ideas here. What did everybody else think of Batman Dark Age number one?
Kofi?
Weird title. I'll say that, weird title, but I think it does some things, because I was kind of like, here we go again. And we just did the Dan Jurgens one, which what's that called again? I don't even remember. Oh my God, there's been so many Batman stories. But the Dan Jurgens, watch out, that takes us back into like the 1920s.
That was actually the first night.
Yeah, the first night. Okay. So we're doing this multiple times, and so I was like, okay, what's this one going to really offer? But it does kind of what I like about, what we might touch on with Ultimate Spider-Man or your favorite, the White Knight series and things like that, is if you're going to redo Batman, like, it's hard to redo it just focusing on Bruce Wayne because we've peeled that character apart and put him back together so many times. So if you're going to do like a reinvention of Batman, you really do kind of got to reinvent the entire world of Batman and make it interesting. And this issue does enough of that, I think, to have gotten me by the end. I was like, okay, like, I'm interested. Some of this is hokey and it's risky because there's some on the nose, like, still, like, we meet certain characters in certain places that we know they're going to become certain things. And it's like, okay, you know, but they're still interesting scenes. And like these different takes in Bruce Wayne's, this version of Bruce Wayne's interaction with these characters and his point of view is very different than the dogmatic version of Bruce we've gotten up until this point. And I think that's the biggest point of interest, is that, yeah, we get a Bruce Wayne who's in a place where there's moral grayness in him instead of this, I'm going to be super cop, I'm going to take down crime. He's like paying off people, you know, being that rich kid, that little, he's a crypto kid, you know, like he's a modern version of what we would expect from somebody that young with that many financial resources. And he's acting like it. And so when we see him meet characters that are going to become certain criminals, it's not in this kind of weird dogmatic way. He's like bonding with them. Right. And it's kind of like, that's the interest. And he's telling Alfred to F off and like, you're not my daddy and stuff like that. And this is a different take. And by the end of this, where that leads to is, we're going to be getting a much more interesting path to who Batman is, why Batman is, and kind of Batman being this mix of very kind of heroic, but also criminal elements, which is his whole thing. I'm going to take crime, dress myself up in it, and be scarier than be the scariest thing to the scary people out there. And so how he gets there in this different path is interesting, and they earn it by the end. So good job.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Knowing how to speak and understand a new language can be an invaluable tool when traveling, meeting new friends, or just even to master a new skill. But it's not always simple when you're bogged down by textbooks and structure classes. That's why so many people trust Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. It truly immerses you in the language you want to learn, like Spanish, French, Italian, Chinese, and more. You won't just be studying English translations. The Rosetta Stone intuitive process helps you pick up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/rs10 today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I was really fascinated by this. First of all, you know, you got Mike Allred on art, and I know some people find his style polarizing, but to me, like, he's one of the all-time greats. I love his stuff. And then you have, there are a couple things here. One, I think it's really subtle and important that Bruce isn't there when his parents die, because now his transformation is no longer about, I want to punch that mugger. It's less about that reaction to the violence. It's less, I want to punch that specific mugger. So much as he is now left with this lingering sense of, when's it my turn? Like, he's a loose end that, and is like almost trying to get on with it, waiting for them to come tie him up. And I think that very subtly changes his behavior and how he approaches Batman. He's no longer someone on a mission. He's someone looking for, like, why am I even still here? Which is interesting. And then you have, you know, Mark Russell is a very satirical writer. So there's also a little bit of, like, that. I feel like it's a take on, like, Reaganomics. how do we go from World of Tomorrow, City of Tomorrow, to what Gotham ultimately becomes? And basically that's put on, like, short-term private equity business decisions, right? Because you have, I don't want to give away the twist, but it's basically someone looking for very short-term profits over Thomas Wayne's vision of a brighter tomorrow. And that is, I feel like, very pointed in a very Mark Russell kind of way. So I found all those things really interesting. It is, like, I don't know, because it's such a long issue, the pacing of it is a little bit, makes it a little bit of a slow burn. And there's not as much of the obvious humor that you usually associate with Mark Russell. But I think it does very subtly do some really interesting things with this origin story, which, as you guys said, is very hard to find new and interesting takes on.
Yeah. And I'm glad you highlighted the difference in the fact that he wasn't there. Because that is such a like pivotal launching point, because it immediately changes even a very small but very impactful thing, and it leads to some really big stuff as the issue goes on. And I will also agree that I think it is a little slow early, but by the end I was very much like, no, I want to keep reading this. Like, this became one I look forward to. Did anyone else have a chance? I'm gonna talk about Feral number one, but anyone else have a chance to read this? I don't know if anyone's familiar with it.
No, okay, not yet.
So Stray Dogs was one of my favorite series when it came out the year, I think it actually started the year before last. And then they did a follow up kind of like side story thing. But now we have the creative team back to do Feral Number One. And Stray Dogs was a, if you didn't read that, was a like, let's take like Oliver and Company style characters. They're all dogs, but then they realize that they are owned by a serial killer. And it's then breaking down how they were all, how they all ended up there. And then like this mystery of them realizing what has happened, realizing their past lives, and then trying to break out of this. It was, and it was like the way the art is just beautiful, and it's like captures that cartoony quality, but then it goes completely brutal and bloody on a dime. It was just like, and you're seeing here, even in the covers, there were a lot of homages to like horror classics and, you know, slasher flicks and things like that of the original. So it was just a one of a kind thing that I just adored. So now we move to Feral, and it's the same creative team, but it's now cats. But the thing is, it's a completely different premise, but it maintains a lot of the tension and stakes, and you're invested in these characters so quickly. The brutality of scenes can hit you, especially like kind of in the opening, like five pages, there's one that kind of sets the tone for the rest of the book. And I don't want to get too much into spoilers of, there's kind of a reveal towards the end of one of a central point, central thing that the crew of characters here will be surviving in this world that is kind of teased in the lead up. So I don't really want to spoil that, but what I will say is that the threat here, as opposed to one person, hey, hello phone. The threat, as opposed to one person, is a thing, is an element almost, of the world and them trying to deal with it and also survive. So it just, it flips the premise on its head, still maintains all the things I adored, from the first one. You know, Fleeks and Forstner's work here is just amazing. I really enjoyed it. I hope people who, it's kind of, for me, kind of flew under the radar. So I hope people will, you know, realize that it is kind of the same team from Stray Dogs and give this a shot, because it's fantastic. So I definitely recommend this. Moving into some rapid fires here. We got a lot to cover. One that Kofi mentioned, let's get into that. So Ultimate Spider-Man number 3, you know, Kofi, what did you think about, you know, how we're picking right up from, we get a big reveal here. Obviously we won't spoil that reveal, but we do learn some big information here. What did you think about this issue?
Sorry, I'm still just in shock. I'm looking at this Marvel Overwatch game trailer, which is pretty, pretty nuts, but yeah. Check out the Phase Zero feed coming up next. Ultimate Spider-Man 3 is, I'm kind of already like sold on Hickman's world, and now we're kind of settled in it and we're just kind of living in it. And I continue to like to see this spin on Marvel characters. Granted, again, the Ultimate Invasion storyline that set this all up was a little flimsy, but this corner of it with Spider-Man is interesting. You know, as the cover art tells you, we get stuff with Bullseye in this. We get stuff with Green Goblin in this. And the action scenes, the part we're just now really getting into, are exciting. And that was kind of like the last lingering question I had about the series, was would the action and the actual superhero-ness of it all be as entertaining? And this was pretty entertaining. And so I'm just kind of at home with this and just kind of living in it now. And it's the most interested I've been in Peter Parker in a long time. So just a lot of great highlights. I know one part in here definitely made you put on your helmet and cheer for joy, Matt. There's one scene in here that I know is like,
which one? There's a couple of spots in here that
just a little daddy daughter date stuff that I know.
I love this book. Yeah, that exactly. Sequence so, you're talking you about just made me smile so much. That's one of my favorite costume decision sequences in a bit. Jamie, how are you feeling?
Oh, I love this. I loved everything about this. I love that, you know, the mainstream Marvel was like, Peter Parker can't have kids and have a marriage and be happy. That would ruin him. And Hickman was like, challenge accepted, and gave him two kids and a marriage. And it's the best thing they've done. I love that. It's so clever on a couple fronts, because the original Ultimate Spider-Man, right, made was like, what if we just kept him as a teenager forever? And this is doing the opposite thing. Like, what if he's already an adult? Why not? And it's also smart because, you know, comic book superhero comics readers, the demographic has aged up so much in the past years, which there's a whole line of analysis about whether that's good or bad that we won't get into here. But it's so smart to meet them where they are. Like, you guys are all in your 40s, so why shouldn't Spider-Man be now? Like, it makes so much sense, and it works because it turns... Again, I won't spoil the ending, but the ending is like a really simple, basic thing from the original Spider-Man comics that is now very different because these are already fully formed adults that we're dealing with instead of, you know, teenagers. So it's really it's really fascinating to me. I think they're really knocking it out of the park with this one.
Agreed. I could not have love this issue more. I think you're absolutely right. Like, it's not the reveal itself, you know, towards the end that, like, you know, stuck with me. It's the execution of that. It's the method and that scene and how that plays out is, again, just like very grounded. And I just love what we're doing here. Yeah. There are several, daddy daughter moments here that just, I cannot believe that at one point in time it was thought that we couldn't do this. Like, that just mm-hmm. boggles my mind. And also just on the artwork front, like, my God, like this is a gorgeous book. Oh my God, there's a fight here that just rules. You know, I don't know when Bullseye became Gambit, like, consistently, but I still dig it. I still love it. Like, it's awesome. I just love it. Like, we're really leaning into that. Yeah.
Colin Farrell changed things.
Colin Farrell.
You guys keep playing Colin Farrell, but his Bullseye changed everything, man. Now, yeah, it's just certain things we need. Watch when
all of a sudden he's going to start hurling
paper clips.
glass, church glass. I gotta start doing it. Moving into something completely different as far as tone, but I think is equally as enthralling is Penguin number 8. And we always talk about this when Jamie's here. it just so happens. Kofi, what did you think of this? Because, like, we've obviously been, you know, kind of building this squad, assembling this team, and now we're really kind of starting to jump into the execution of bigger plans here. What'd you think?
You know, I'm a pronounced Tom King fan, but this was one of those that I had to, like, immediately read twice because I was just like, wait, when I got to the end, I was like, wait, hold up, what? And then I, like, went back and was like, okay, like, I get this. And the way this issue is laid out and kind of setting up a larger arc that I think will carry us forward in this series, because this series has taken a lot of time jumps and just kind of moved us around, and each individual story is good, but it's kind of hard to get reacquainted to where you are in all this. But this one complicates that a little bit more, but in an interesting kind of way. And so, again, it's like the trick of when I step back at the end, I was like, wait, what all has happened here? And then I had to go back and reread it again. And I liked it, but I like that it's still kind of doing, in the midst of all this, what we're really doing is laying out who Oswald Cobblepot is and what makes the Penguin, quote unquote, you know, so dangerous. And I've read a lot this week. Is this the one where, like, Nygma's cracking jokes about him and that whole thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. And there's, like, scenes in the present day where, like, it's funny to see how Penguin is, you know, established when he just meets the guy with the dog in the park, and just that simple scene. And you get that thing like, oh man, are you going to kill me because, like, I annoyed you? And he's like, no, no. I'll have somebody else do it. And you're like, oh Jesus. Like, yeah. So it continues to be good. This one is, like, a little bit, you really got to be paying attention to these issues like this, but it's worth it in some really kind of stunning moments. Like, just the scene where he gets his office and all of that stuff is really well done. And it just continues to boggle the mind that Tom King can, you know, do these deep character dives and even take characters like Penguin and turn them, that mythos, completely around, to the point where I think we'll all look at this different by the time we're done the series.
Yeah. Now, I know Jamie didn't have a chance to read Penguin, But I do know you were able to dive into Rise of the Powers of X, number three. How are you thinking, number one? Because I don't think we've actually touched base in a minute on how you're kind of feeling about Fall of X in general and its kind of overall execution, but also this issue.
Messy is what I would call it. The whole Fall of X thing has gotten really messy, too big, too much going on. However, this issue, like, this was good. This is what I wanted from Fall of X, which is a return to kind of the tighter high concept ideas and plotting that, you know, like Rise and Hoxpox did. And also like giving us some sort of like value judgment on the whole Krakoan experiment. Because that's been one of the most interesting things is watching people be like, are the X-Men villains now? Or like, is it their right to go make this other nation? It's really interesting to see in this issue, Professor X kind of lay out his case that like he believed in the vision of what Krakoa should be, but was it worth achieving that utopia if he had to sacrifice basically everything he actually believed in to get there? And it's literally becomes like a would you kill baby Hitler scenario as he as like the final test of that. And yeah, it's really interesting. It brings a lot of things that have been simmering like from the beginning. Like, should you ever trust Sinister? Like, if Sinister thinks it's a good idea, is it a good idea? Probably not. Brings that kind of thing to the fore. It's really surprising, really tense. Basically everything that pretty much every other part of Fall of X has not been. So I really love this issue. It made me like really energized to see where this all ends up again after being very like over it and ready for it to just be done.
Kofi, how are you feeling? Did it win you back?
I wrote up the preview for this issue, and when I did, I just kind of said like, this thing, I mean, I just said what Jamie said. This has become so overblown and overdone. But this issue kind of hammers it home in a weird way because it's a good issue, but it hammers home that like there really were just two or three good stories we needed to tell to get out of this. And this was one of them. It was the this is where we've had to read Dead X-Men, a fall, a rise of this, of that, another, you know, 50 other things. But this is what we wanted to get. Professor X going back, talking in Moira and the kill baby Hitler thing that Jamie kind of put on the table. And it's done in an interesting way. It's been a long time since we've checked in with Xavier in any kind of deep level kind of way and gotten his perspective on Krakoa. The man, Hickman, literally put the man in your favorite thing, a helmet, and just was like, that's all you get is strange helmet looking at you. And, you know, so it was very interesting. And to see these two characters with this amount of history between them, like, it's very understated, but Moira and Xavier have so much between them that this was a good kind of sci-fi, timey-wimey type of tale. But really, after this, there's only, like, yeah, I know there's so much of this we still got to do, but, yeah, there's only, like, a couple plot points we really are interested in here, and we need to get out of what ultimately happens to this timeline to make us reset. And how are we keeping Rasputin is pretty much all I need to know. And yeah. So yeah, good issue. Mess of a closeout of a good thing.
Yeah, this has been a little messy. I am looking forward to, I still want those Krakoan ideas to make it into that next era. Right. Cause there's so much I love, but this isn't the conclusion that I was kind of hoping for. This wasn't exactly, you know, what I was pulling for. Maybe it could all pull together though at the end, right? Right. We still got like 80 issues to go.
I like the like beats they're teasing coming up. I think that like everything that issue laid out as like, here's where we're going. I'm like, oh, okay, I'm into that. Let's go. It's just you don't need to be reading like the half dozen books they have going on, because a lot of them are just keeping Marvel's market share what it is, right? That's pretty much why they're there.
Yeah, I will just say that, like, yeah, this is it's just become, it's disappointing how much of a mess this has become in the end. And just, I would be amazed if there's even the most hardcore fan who could sit down and write out all of this and explain it all to everybody clearly about how this is all unfolded. Because we still got issues like going back to, you know, still like you finish X-Force and it's like, well, now you're ready for Fall of X. And it's like, well, now you're ready for Dead X-Men. And it's like, guys, I've read all these things and I don't remember what's what and who's who and where's where. And like, yeah, it's pretty nuts. But yeah, this was an interesting one.
I know we got to close out here in a minute, so I want to get to a couple books. Jamie, you got a chance to read The Goon, which this looks fantastic. I haven't had a chance to read this yet. What did you think about Them That Don't Stay Dead, which is easily one of my favorite titles of 2024?
Oh, this was great. So I've got a soft spot for The Goon anyway, because, you know, Eric Powell's local to Nashville. So I've been to like the anniversary shindigs he throws every once in a while. And I haven't read every issue of The Goon, but whenever you read it, it's super inviting. I don't know like everything about it, but you can easily pick this up and read it. And it tells you what you need to know, which isn't much. It's beautiful black and white comics art. It's a really simple, straightforward, like tough guy hero with a heart of gold, keeping his little corner of the world safe from all the bad guys and creepy things that lurk in the night, basically by beating them up. It's not complicated, but it's great because it's so, the cartooning and the characterizations are all so charming. It's really fun to get to see in this issue, like the goon do, I guess, his version of flirting as far as that goes, and see how that turns out with hilarious results. And it ends with a nice little, again, simple, straightforward, not reinventing the wheel kind of hook to draw you into the rest of the story. It's just really great, like expertly done, straightforward cartooning. And I don't want, like, straightforward sounds like basic and uninteresting. That's not how I mean it. I mean, this is like, it doesn't need gimmicks. It is just really good art and really solid writing. I highly recommend it to anyone, even if you haven't touched The Goon before. It's a very easy pick up and enjoy for a few minutes type of thing. And you'll probably want to come back for more when you're done with it.
Well, and you've been keeping up with The Six Fingers as well. And that hit issue 2. Are you still, how you feeling about it?
I'm liking it. So this is kind of the opposite of The Goon. This one is a like sister series to The One Hand, which is another Image comic series. You're seeing the same story from the perspective of the killer and the investigator investigating the killer, which is an interesting premise. The deal here is that the guy who is doing the killings, he knows he's doing it, but he like blacks out when it happens. And he's trying to figure out why. And there's this really interesting tension because he is like a straightforward man of science type of person. So he is really insistent that whatever is going on, he can figure it out. He can control it. And in the meantime, he's blacking out and killing people. But he's also like not, they don't make him like some sort of sociopath. There's this great scene where like he's conversing with this really elite, like, artist in the art scene who's like making light of the killings, and he's like, you know, those people had families and stuff, right? Like, get out of here with that. Which is really interesting and humanizes him in interesting ways. My only complaint with this issue is that it kind of repeats a lot of plot points from the first issue, and we end up in kind of the same place by the end of it. But it's really interesting, especially when paired with The One Hand, because The One Hand is very like grungy and kind of the dark side of the cyberpunk stuff, whereas this one is very the clean, tightly drawn, shiny side of it. And they make for a very interesting, like, you know, a point counterpoint to seeing how this weird phenomenon is going on. And there's a weird sci-fi something going on, like mystery that is brewing underneath, but no idea where that's going yet, but I'm interested in seeing how it ends up.
Well, I want to close out with two quick ones. Duke, number 4, is out. I am just loving everything Skybound is doing with the G.I. Joe franchise. I just love this book. Again, this one, there's not any like particularly big revelations here or anything. It's just like kind of almost classic G.I. Joe, you know, turning on each other and working together, trying to survive the odds type of thing. But there's just some great moments that happen here, and it moves the story forward in a big way. So I'm very excited for the next issue as we kind of tee up a bigger battle here. And then also I want to end with Under York number one, because I will read anything Mirka is on. Like that name means I will check out that book easy. And I'm rarely disappointed. And this is a super interesting premise and like just like really different. I've seen a lot of mystic and, you know, kind of leaning into that like magical side of things. But this just like there are some really cool ideas here. Jamie, what did you think? You did the full review for us.
Yeah, I got to be honest. I didn't love this. Are you familiar with Neil Gaiman's Neverwhere?
Mm-mm.
No, it's a very similar premise, but it's London. There's like a London above and a London below. So it's okay. A similar premise. And this felt like they took that and like tried to turn it into something like a CW teen supernatural drama, like The Vampire Diaries or something like that. Done. Like, I think Mirka Andolfo is a very talented artist, but in this particular book, everyone is drawn to look like young and attractive, and they have like a soft glow, which reminded me of that like teen drama type of vibe. And then like all of the dialogue is really heavy exposition, except for like, there's one scene where one of the characters like looking at the reader and is like, the black winds flow through my soul, except they haven't explained anything about what that means. So it just feels super random and like almost unintentionally funny. Like I was like, what is going on here? So yeah, I didn't like, this was not, there's skill here, but aesthetically it is not my vibe. And then it was so much dialogue and the characters are all like, have one emotion and it's turned up to 12 at all times. Like her roommate is so like comically self-interested that I don't know if she's like evil or the comic relief. It's weird. So this one did not vibe with me very well. But you know, maybe now that all that exposition is out of the way, the next issue will be better. But I can't lie. I didn't really care for this first one.
When Jamie described it as a CW show like The Vampire Diaries, I feel like he took a shot at my viewing habits. I feel like that was directly aimed at me because that's
I think he was taking a shot, but he had no idea that this was your viewing habit. Like, yeah, I was like, yeah, that sounds about Matt.
Were you looking at my DVR?
Just because it's not my vibe doesn't mean it's not your vibe. Not everything's.
I don't watch a lot of Vampire Diaries and Originals reels at all. No, I think number one, I didn't have the familiarity with you know Gaiman's work, so that probably it's a really, to me it was like, oh okay. I mean, we've seen even in Batman, we've seen like, you know,
yeah,
the kind of underground version of Gotham and the top of it. So like that as a concept, but when it's paired with the mystical side of things, I just like, I'm a sucker for that type of thing. Even though we get into some like, you know, very much like demon and voodoo territory, which isn't actually typically my vibe. That's not something I still can't watch The Skeleton Key again after watching it one time because the ending freaked me out. Right. So like, that's how I am. But like this to me did an interesting job of like getting me interested in concepts that I still actually know nothing about, which I agree with you completely. I was like, what the hell is the Black Winds? I don't know what half this stuff is, but I am intrigued in it. And I will say it's funny that I actually didn't think this leaned hard enough into Mirka's style, because if you read like Sweet Paprika and Blasphemous and those books, like it's actually kind of like unleashed and really,
yeah, I don't read really a lot dives of her in. Stuff.
This wasn't enough for me. They look too ordinary.
Just say you like what you like. We get it.
Okay. But I'm intrigued. But I do agree with you. There was a lot of exposition. I do think this was very much a slow burn. But by the end of it, it did manage to hook me. So yeah, lots of books we didn't get to actually get to here. I am saving Alan Scott, the Green Lantern, for Friday, actually, because I do actually want to get Janelle's input on that because she was also digging that series. So we didn't forget about it, but I will table that for Friday. So until next time, we got to bounce here. Kofi, where can they find you on the handles?
Just at Kofi Outlaw, and you can always find me on the Comic Book Nation feeds.
Jamie?
At Jamie Lovett on, you know, Twitter, X, Blue Sky, whatever, wherever we're doing this now. I can't keep track.
And I am Matt Aguilar, CB, and until next week, peace, deuces, enjoy some comics.